This is News in No Time. Ed Gordon on today's roundtable. Washington insider Jack Abramoff pleads guilty, and the Congressional Black Caucus Foundation is questioned about funds they raised for Katrina victims. Joining us today to discuss these topics and more from our NPR headquarters in Washington, D.C., Karen Narasaki, president and executive director of the Asian American Justice Center, and at our bureau in New York, Michael Myers, executive director of the New York Civil Rights Coalition, and joining us from Laurel, Maryland today, George Curry, editor-in-chief of the National Newspaper Publishers Association News Service. Thank you all for joining us. Happy New Year to you. One of the things that we want to talk about is the story that America has been transfixed over the last few days on, and that is the attempted rescue of the miners who were trapped. And what we want to focus on is the idea, George Curry, you've been in this business for a long time, you know how competitive it is. Particularly on the East Coast, the newspapers and the first initial reports were wrong, suggesting that 12 miners, in fact, had been rescued and saved, confirmed alive. And later, unfortunately, we found out, in fact, that 12 had died.
Well, there are a couple of problems. One is that there was a lot of misinformation, inaccurate information, including from the governor, who announced that there were survivors. You had union officials from the coal industry saying they had survivors, and you had cell phones. So what rumors could spread like wildfire. From the media standpoint, though, the impact of cable TV on breaking news is enormous. Cable TV is great. TV is great because it can bring you the emotion of the moment, that unlike any other medium. But at the same time, it's not for ongoing, a complicated story, because when there are no new developments, they also almost seem to make them up instead of saying, ladies and gentlemen, we simply do not know. And so you got this competition from these from various cable networks, and you got the constant appetite for 24-hour news when you really don't know what's happening, and that tends to skew things.
Michael Myers, there is this sense of immediacy that we've seen, particularly as George Curry astutely suggests, with the advent of 24-hour news, the want for a quick return. We should note that one of the reporters out there who really has come out of retirement to help with this story at NBC, Bob Hager, made suggestions last night to be very cautious, because after the first announcement, he frankly utilized all of his years of reporting and suggested that more news had not been coming quickly enough to really say that these people were alive and well. It does seem that that kind of second sourcing and waiting and making sure you have the story right has to a great degree fallen by the wayside.
Well, unfortunately, you know, coal mining is dangerous work. Journalism is not always accurate and reliable. And the media, particularly newspapers, have a feeling that they have deadlines to meet. And the nation was, as you suggested, fixated and gripped with this concern and with this human tragedy. And in that situation, in those circumstances, you want to know and you want to communicate and report what you know as soon as you think you know it. People make mistakes. This is a world of instant communications and therefore instant mistakes. Apparently, there were mistakes with respect to the communicating from the mine, from the rescuers team to the outside, and it was a mistake. The headlines of many of papers in today were mistaken. Not the first time, won't be the last time.
Karen, can we suggest that often we in the media make too much of it? There is human error whenever, obviously, humans are involved. This is one of those cases. Are we making perhaps too much out of this? Sometimes, as Michael suggests, headlines are wrong, news accounts are wrong, but you have to hold people's feet to the fire in our industry, in the medium of news in particular, to make sure, though, that you second source and you're getting this right.
I think this was a very challenging story to cover, but it is surprising that there wasn't more skepticism on the part of journalists, because the reports leading up to that had shown that there was no indication that anybody was still alive. There was very little reason to believe. Everybody knew that it would be a huge miracle for anybody to be found alive. They only had an hour's worth of air in those tanks. So, you know, I think that more caution could have been exercised. But I'm more shocked by the fact that the mine owner, the CEO of the company, knew 20 minutes after the first announcement that they were alive that that, in fact, wasn't true. And he didn't, and they didn't take any steps to let the families know that perhaps the celebration was too early.
Yeah, the company's suggestion is that, George, let me get this out. Let me get this out and then pick up the point. The company's suggestion was, even though they had received word 20 minutes later that, in fact, these people were dead and not alive, the company is suggesting that they wanted to stop and make sure, double and triple check that, as to not keep this roller coaster alive. Go ahead, George Kerr.
Yeah, I think the important thing here that there was one survivor, and that caused unrealistic hope. And so I think we shouldn't minimize that. Now, I disagree with Michael early when he mentioned the newspapers. Yeah, they come out. They had problem with deadlines, and they're going to come out with the wrong headlines, just like the Tribune did with Truman. But the real pressure is cable and Internet. That's really, well, same election. But that was the real pressures from the cable and Internet. In this instant, who's going to be first? What time did you report it? And that's where I think a lot of this frenzy.
Having worked in that world, there is a lot of pressure on you to get it out, get it first, and make sure that when the papers come out tomorrow, they announce that your network got it first. Let me move on to another headline making scandal now, it seems. Someone who is very familiar to Washington insiders, Jack Abramoff, is now in some hot water. He and in fact, has pled guilty federal charges in Washington and Miami of influence peddling, if you will. It's as simple as that. Of members of Congress, lawyers will suggest that he is going to make some plea agreements, some plea bargains, and blow the whistles. And a lot of nervous people, Michael Myers, in Washington who sit in Congress, upwards to as many as 20 members of Congress and aides are whispered to be implicated, be trade off for votes, for money and favors. This could be a huge, huge scandal.
Absolutely. In the old days on TV, used to have that theme, dum-da-dum-dum. Now it's just dum-dum-dum. These people should have known not only the law, they should know right from wrong. These are people who are remnants of, if not part of, a conspiracy of the moral majority in this nation. Jack Abramoff has shown himself through this plea to three felonies, which include a conspiracy to corrupt public officials, meaning to bribe them, to get them to do what you want and pay them money for it. He has shown himself to be a first-class scoundrel. Just another scoundrel, a jack-in-the-box who invokes, by the way, the name of God in a posture before the of contrition before the sentencing federal judge. These people have no shame. They are shameless. And so the people who have been the beneficiaries, in quotes, of his largesse and his co-conspirators' largesse are, of course, worrying, and they should worry. And I just hope, that Congress does not have hearings, because we don't need the chickens, the people looking for chicken who thinks that they can own this investigation. This is a federal criminal prosecution. Let the federal criminal prosecution go forth. No possible.
Karen, here's what's interesting here. Jack Abramoff is not just out of the shadows in terms of the whispers that have gone on for years in Washington about his influence over Congress. Now we are starting to see, in fact, the money trail hit. But this is not a man who was in the dark, so to speak. There were a lot of people who knew about how much influence he had on Capitol Hill.
Well, this really is Enron for all the lobbyists on K Street. So I expect to see a lot of policies coming forward about trying to further restrict this kind of thing. The problem was that he was clearly breaking the law, and there's very little enforcement about what is going on. And it shows really the change over the last 4 or 5 years in terms of the power of money. I mean, money has always been powerful. Money has always bought you access. But the hubris of the people involved in terms of not even trying to cover it up, I think, is what's really new in the story.
George Curry, here's my skepticism, living and breathing as large as King Kong. You and I have been in D.C. and covered D.C. for a long time. We know the clout and the power of lobbyists. This is of no surprise to me, and I am always stumped by the fact that the journalism world has quite frankly, turned a blind eye to a great degree of the money that changes hands, albeit even sometimes legal by virtue of how you wrap and tie a bow on a box in terms of lobbyists and their ability to influence votes in Washington.
Yeah, this is no surprise to me. I think I agree with Karen, who said just the boldness of it, just the audacity. They don't care what you see what they're doing. I mean, and a person I think is going to really get hurt in this, in addition to what's happening in Texas, is Tom DeLay. I mean, what Abramoff did was go out and get these influential top aides to all these congresspersons and hire them to go back and lobby their former boss, even though it's less than a one-year ban on them. They didn't care. They had these big, expensive golf trip to Scotland. You can play the best. When they went to Texas for trial, he used a corporate plane. I mean, this is brazen in your face, and nobody should be surprised. And my worry is that the plea itself will actually curtail the extent of the investigation. I want it to expand, and let's find out all of the information.
All right, well, this is just the tip of the iceberg, and we'll get to this story throughout the days and weeks to come. I want to make sure that we get this in because Michael Myers and George Curry sent this over to us as a story that they wanted to talk about. And here's the interesting note, and we should suggest that we are going to get Don Tharp, the president of the Congressional Black Caucus Foundation, on with us hopefully tomorrow. But there was a blogger report, and we should note that this blogger is a well-known right-leaning political right-leaning writer who is suggesting that the Congressional Black Caucus has raised upwards to $400,000 and the organization has not distributed any of that money. That money was raised for Hurricane Katrina victims. We did speak with the CBC spokesperson yesterday and suggested that the organization has already distributed upwards to $290,000 to a faith-based nonprofit development organization called Community of Faith for Economic Empowerment, and their suggestion is the other monies will in fact be distributed. It's just a process that they have to go through. Michael Myers, when you hear this kind of accusation, part of the accusation is that they're sitting on this money to build the interest, and there is even a wink and a nod from this writer, again, only from this writer, with the suggestion that maybe they're just sitting on this money to have the money. When you hear this kind of accusation, and when you think of all the money out there, what's your thought here? And we should note that the Congressional Black Caucus Foundation is not the Congressional Black Caucus. It's a 501c3 the foundation of the group. Go ahead, Mike.
Well, my thought is there's the irony of the story, the irony of it all, the Congressional Black Caucus and the Congressional Black Caucus Foundation will work hand in hand, by the way, in tandem. The irony of these people who say there is urgent need for urgent funds to help the Katrina victims and holding fundraisers and holding themselves out to raise money and forming, and then saying, and this is not according to what you call the right-wing blogger, but according to the foundation, at least the stuff that I've read from them, saying they need to form a committee to determine how to dispense the funds. Well, we don't need a committee to determine how to dispense the funds months later after you raise the fund. For me, the larger question is the issue of advocacy groups. And the CBC Foundation, not-for-profit, nonpartisan, they are an advocacy group. And here you have advocacy groups raising money for direct relief efforts. We have direct relief organizations out there. They should encourage people to give directly to the direct relief organizations. Why does the CBC Foundation need to collect money for direct relief campaigns? Why does the NAACP, another advocacy group, need to do it? That's the larger question. And they
Karen,
don't
one of
need
those
to do
questions,
it.
Let's take that question on, Karen. One of those questions raised by Michael Myers, why the need? There were a lot of people who suggested that the organizations that are put in place to distribute that money weren't, in fact, doing the job, particularly to the poorest of the poor in these
not communities.
So in your opinion, Karen, is there a need to make this happen? And then, George Curry, I'm going to bring you back to the point. Karen?
Well, you know, speaking as a nonprofit organization who was caught up in Katrina, I can tell you, and we decided not to do this, but there was enormous pressure in the Asian American community because reports started to come out about how the Red Cross was not really serving the Asian immigrants. That there were 60,000 Vietnamese who were limited English proficient down there who were not being served. There were reports about how FEMA and other agencies were not serving the Latino or African American community. So we got a lot of questions about where can we send money. People wanted to give money, but they wanted to give money to a trusted source. So I think it's not surprising. And people who have money to give want to make sure that they're giving it to a nonprofit, you know, credible source. So there's a lot of pressure to give it out. I think the challenges and the reason why we chose not to do it is because we realized how hard it was going to be to give the money out once we got it in a responsible manner. And that
All right,
really,
George Curry.
It's a challenge
ahead, Karen,
because you have to be accountable for the money that you get.
Mm-hmm. George Curry with about a minute 30, and we should note that we are in contact with the CBC Foundation. Hopefully they'll be on with us tomorrow. The idea that they're suggesting they've already given out $290,000 of this money, they're going to release an official statement sometime today. George.
Okay, first of all, I didn't suggest a story for the record. Secondly, Michael Massey has no credibility.
That's the blogger we've been talking about.
So, yeah, and he's more than a blogger. He's a conservative, professional black conservative. And so it should be surprising. And they have given the money out. I mean, so I'll take the CBC Foundation word over his any day of the week. Blacks, Latinos, Asian Americans want credibility, and they don't get that from the Red Cross, and they find it's better to go through black churches and local organizations. And to me, considering the record of Red Cross, that's where I would go first as well. So that's not surprising, and I actually applaud them for doing something.
All right. Karen Narasaki, Michael Myers, George Curry, thank you all for joining us today. Greatly appreciate it.
Happy New Year.